Funny thing, I had an experience like this just last week. I have a set of tapes that we don't promote in churches because they were done 10 years ago when what I was saying probably would make these walls shudder a little bit. Not what I was saying, but how I was saying it. But they're called The Wit and Wisdom of Wayne Dyer, and they still are advertised in different places. And it was an all-day seminar that I gave at a university to a group of university students in 1977 or 1976 at the University of Minnesota. It was the very first set of tapes I ever did when cassettes were just starting to get very big. And they are advertised, and someone wrote to me and asked me for a set of these tapes. It was someone from the Southeast Bank in Miami, Florida. His name is Dennis Campbell. Dennis ordered the tapes, and I sent him a set of the tapes, and he sent me a check for them, and that was a nice transaction. And about a week later, he sent me a individual tape back. He said it's been mismarked, and it turns out that the publisher of the tapes in Minneapolis had mismarked a group of the tapes, and there were two tape twos in there, and the tape four was mismarked, and it was supposed to be three or something like that. And anyway, the whole thing was a mess. And I had sent out seven of those tapes before I realized it, and then I was getting these letters about the confusion in the tapes. He sent me back the tape and said, and it was very nice, and a letter, and he was very kind, and he said, please fix this tape and have it sent back to me. So what I used to do in these circumstances, I would then turn that responsibility over to the publisher and write the publisher a letter and send them the tape, and then it was just sort of off of my shoulders. I didn't have to think about it anymore. I would give them the address and say, now you send him the tape and get this fixed up. It's not my fault. I didn't do anything wrong. And they would always do it, but it would always take about 3 or 4 weeks. And I got to thinking about that, and I had done it all. I had put the tape in an envelope, and I was sending it, and it said, please correct this and send him a correct set of tape. And just as I was about to mail it, something hit me, and it said, he is the customer. And he has already paid for these tapes. I should be serving him in any possible way that I can. I shouldn't be expecting him to have to wait 3 weeks for something he already paid for. It's my responsibility. So I went back upstairs, took out a fresh set of tapes, mailed it to him, the whole new set, and then I included in it the postage and an envelope to send back the other set at his convenience and gave him the corrected set, which was a whole different stance from how I had done this before in my life. It was thinking of him and the customer before myself. Last week, I gave a speech for Southeast Bank and received almost $10,000. He hired me to come and be a consultant to their bank, all because of that one little incident and how I handled that particular thing. Instead of thinking about what was in it for me, thinking about the best way to do it for them, I made $10,000 and became a consultant for their bank, and now will do workshops and training their bank employees. What he said when he introduced me was that that example of thinking of him as the most important, he said he was in shock when he received it back. He expected to wait 3 or 4 weeks and have the whole thing. And the same thing is true here. So whichever one of you is going to give me $10,000 for this afternoon, you might as well just get it over with and we'll... So the same kind of message does really apply, because I'm here to serve you today. Being service-oriented. Most of the time, our inclination when we feel we have been wronged, our inclination is to see what we can do to the other guy. We operate from a revenge motif instead of a forgiveness one. Or we think of ourselves first. We're ego-centered rather than other-centered. And this higher level of consciousness, what becomes automatic for you after a while is to begin to think about, how can I serve other people in a better way? How can I go out of my way to do something? Part of one of the universal laws that I think of is what we call, what goes around comes around. What you send out into the world is pretty much what you're going to get back. The universe has to be like circular almost, because its bigness implies that it's complete in some way and that it's like it all comes back. It all just sort of circles. And so it's like what you put out there, whatever it is that you're putting out there in the world, is pretty much what you're going to get back. And I tell people all the time, don't look at what you're getting back in the world from the world. If you're getting disease back, or you're getting poverty back, or you're getting unhappiness back, or your relationships are sour, don't tell yourself that these are the things that you are getting back from other people who are bad and are doing things not the right way, the way you would like them to be. Instead, try looking at what it is that you're putting out into the world.
ask yourself, what am I doing to create this lack in my life? Rather than why are other people not sending me what I would like? What am I doing, putting the emphasis on myself, to bring these kinds of things about in my life? What did I do to bring about this disease process that I have going on? One of the hardest things we have to deal with people who have severe illnesses, cancer patients, people with heart disease and so on, is to get them to accept responsibility for it. And that's a very tough one because people don't want to do that. They don't want to say that maybe it was me, maybe it was something that I did, maybe it was the way that I ate for a lifetime, maybe it was where I chose to live. They're looking for, oh, it runs in my family, or isn't this... Now, the first step to healing anything in your life is to understand that whatever disease process is going on within you is something that you carry around. You own it all. It's all yours. And unless you're willing to say to yourself, I somehow contributed to the creation of this state that my body is in, then you have no option for getting rid of it. You just have to wait for whatever it was that did it to you to stop doing it to you. And if you wait for that, if you're waiting for someone or something else to make it go away, and feeling self-righteous and feeling right, all right, I'm right. This thing caused me to do that. We live in a carcinogenic world, or the tobacco manufacturers. And there are now people out there literally suing tobacco manufacturers for giving them cancer, even though they made the choice to pick up cigarettes day in and day out. They don't want to take that responsibility and say, I created this lung cancer. They want to blame the tobacco growers. We do this all the time, whether it's with disease or whatever it is. We're constantly looking at what someone else did to us. In the little story about the way that I handled the tapes, I have found that when, and I don't know why, I can't get in the form that I am in. Why? What happens when I forget about myself and my ego involvement in things and decide that I am not going to concern myself with what I get first. I'm going to concern myself with dealing with human beings on an ethical way and in the best way that I can to serve them, as generous as I can possibly be, and going overboard in that generosity, that always comes back to me in a more positive way, and I usually get more back than what I give out. But I can only say that for me, it seems to always work, that when I forget about my own quotas and my own concerns and what I'm getting out of it, and I go the extra mile and do it for them first and forget about me, and don't concern myself with, yes, I know I shouldn't have to do this. I stop myself when I'm about to do anything. When anybody writes to me, but if they complain about something that I wrote in a book, or if they complain about one of the tapes and the voice quality isn't right, I instantly send them a whole new set of tapes. Instantly. I instantly say, they purchased a set of tapes and my name is on it. I'll send them a set. And then I'll get it taken care of. This company will take care of that. There's no problem with it. But take care of them first. Send it express mail. Why not? I mean, go out of your way. There's an old thing about when somebody came in, they were going to do our pool. I had Chattahoochee on the pool all around it. And this stuff, the stones keep coming out. My little children walk along on their little feet, and all of a sudden they got a little stone in their foot. And so everybody thinks that Chattahoochee is the greatest thing in the world. I don't want Chattahoochee, okay? I want to cover up my Chattahoochee with something that is smooth that the kids can walk on, and I don't have to put this glue on to keep it together all the time. So I call this company. And the guy comes out. He said, I can cover your pool with this sun deck stuff, whatever it is. He said, I can do it for $1,500. He said, I'll cover it. I said, that's not a fair price. He said, what do you mean it's not a fair price? I said, what I want you to do is do it as if it were your own pool. I want you to repair my pool deck as if it were yours. I want you to put that kind of excellence, and I'm willing to give you 10% more for doing that. He said, that's fantastic. I can't believe it. I said, yeah, I'll give you $1,650 if you'll do it this way. And he came out there, and he spent so much time on it. He came out the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and he checked it out, and he was very careful with it, and did an absolutely beautiful job. Why? Because I was giving him a little more, and not assuming that this guy was out to rip me off and so on, even if he had been at the beginning. And when you do that, when you make that your life practice of just constantly thinking about, how can I do something nice for that person? Do you know that everybody I meet, I give a copy of my book to? Almost everybody I meet, on an airplane, walking through a hotel lobby, anybody who ever comes up to me and says, you're Wayne Dyer, and I listen to your tapes, and I've read this, I usually give them gifts from Micah's, and I sign, and I give it to them. And everyone says, how can you do that? Doesn't that cost you a fortune? Aren't you spending a lot of money? I say, yeah, but just think about it. Every person that you give an autographed book to, just give it to, because you believe in the message, what are they going to do with it? That's an event in most people's life, to get an autographed book from the owner. They will tell other people about it and other people. And before long, you've created this entire network of human beings who are with you and can't do enough for you. And before long, you know, I've given it to people many times, and they'll say, well, I'd like to have you come and speak to our organization. We'd really like to have... Do you have a phone number? And I'll write my secretary's phone number down there. And before you know it, a $4 book. And all of a sudden, I'm getting large speaking engagement fees and so on. Just because of that principle of what goes around comes around. And if what's coming back to you isn't something that you like, you've got to look at what you're putting out there. You've got to look at that. It's so much easier to just say, oh, poor me, oh, I'm so unlucky, and all that. You've got to take responsibility for it all, even the accidents in your life, even the accidents. I mean, I had an accident not too long ago, and I don't even think there's such a thing as an accident. I really believe that I created that myself. Even if somebody is coming around the corner and you didn't even see them, and so you still have to take responsibility for being there. It sounds strange, but the minute you take responsibility for it, then you have the opportunity to do something about it. Think about the word responsibility for a second. It means, to me, to respond with ability. If you're not responding with ability, then you're not being responsible. You don't have responsibility. It's quite irresponsible to be blaming other situations or other things or other circumstances in your life for what is going on, because then you don't have the option of responding with ability. You're just not responding. Taking responsibility for anything that's going on within you or to you or in your relationships or on your job or whatever, no matter how difficult that seems to be, it's crucial for you to do it. Not because you want to blame yourself, because the blame part is just meaningless. If you've got cancer, you've got it. If you're going through a divorce, you're going through it. If you're broke, you're broke. Whether you blame yourself or blame somebody, it doesn't change any of that, all right? The fact is that in order to correct it, what you have to say is, maybe, just maybe, I am creating this for myself within me. And if that's the case, just if, all right, so you don't get yourself all tied up with blame, then maybe if I change these things, I can do some things about it. And that's really all I'm talking about here. Here are some of the things that you can do to change the conditions of your life. And while they don't fit neatly into nice little categories and rules and laws that always apply on a linear sense, try them anyway. Try not thinking hateful thoughts. Try forgiving the people in your life that you feel have damaged or hurt you. Try getting rid of revenge as a motive in life. Try believing that the miracles that are out there are things that are happening because they're supposed to be happening. Just try it. And when someone sends you some anger, some hatred, or something, try sending them some love instead of just responding the way you always have. And just see if you can't not only change some of the things within your own life, but you'll see other people around you almost shifting their way of looking at you. They say that when Christ would walk into a village, or when Buddha would walk into a village, their very presence, just their presence, would raise the consciousness of people around them. I don't know if it's ever happened to you, but it does to me. When a really special, special person is around, they're in the room with you, they have an aura. Just their presence there does something to change the atmosphere of the room. That happened to me with Ken Kies, who wrote the Handbook to Higher Consciousness, who is in a wheelchair, and I've talked about on some of my other tapes. And he was in our living room, and I noticed that the children were more still and more calm than they were before he came in. And I noticed there was more of a loving kind of glow that was going on there. I can remember doing an interview with New Dimensions Radio several years ago, and when I walked into the studio, Michael Toms, who was going to do the interview, had a very low, pleasant voice. He had interviewed some of the greatest spiritual leaders and people of all time, from Buckminster Fuller to many of the Indian gurus to Krishnamurti and people like that. Everybody involved in what they call, quote, the New Age movement, which is a funny name, New Age. I mean, this is ancient kind of truth. When we sat down to talk, there was a real soft music on, and the whole ambience changed. Just the presence of a peaceful, loving person in a room can do that. A great entertainer has that quality. Frank Sinatra can walk out onto a stage. I watched him in Las Vegas one time, and they just had the light coming down on the stage. And just his walking out there, just his presence there, because of the great entertainment quality that he has as a superstar, changed the whole complexion, the whole ambience of the room. It's particularly true of highly spiritual people. Maslow described it in Toward a Psychology of Being, that there are some people who have almost godlike qualities or spiritual, very highly spiritual qualities. And when you're around them, you feel as if you're around a saint. and being in their company, whatever it is, whether it's just driving in a car or just talking to them on the telephone or just being in the same room with them, raises the consciousness of the people around them. They're not giving out love. They're not getting it back. They're radiating. It's something that once you get it and understand it, it starts to radiate out from you. When you have that, and anybody has, mothers are very, very good like that with their children. I'll give you an example. I spoke for the La Leche League in Chicago. I was the keynote speaker for their conference. And the La Leche League is an organization for nursing mothers, but it's really much more than that. It's really to try to help raise no-limit children and to raise the consciousness of children. And it's a very peaceful, loving, beautiful organization, always there to help any woman who's ever has nursing problems or problems with child-rearing or whatever. I was speaking. Now, the La Leche League has a policy, and I've never had to do this before in my life. There were about 800 women there, mothers, and they also had their babies. They were nursing their babies while I was speaking, and they had toddlers in there. And I'm talking about 400 or 500 children were in the room. You had to talk over this noise. Now, mothers are good at this. I mean, my wife is terrific at this. She can be talking to me and having a perfectly clear conversation and understand everything that I'm saying, and I'll think that she's not listening to me. And she hears everything that I'm saying, even though this one over here is asking for that, and this one is nursing, and that one, because we have a house full of little children. You just learn to do that. So for the women listening to me, it wasn't a problem at all. They were concentrating on me and taking care of their children as well. But 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds, and there was a lot of noise and so on, and I wasn't accustomed to that. But I got used to it. I talked for about an hour and 45 minutes. And the first 20 or 25 minutes, I was bothered by it. And then I just transcended it. I made a decision right there on stage that if they could hear me, and it was perfectly fine, then I wasn't going to let it bother me. And it just stopped bothering me. But I often do a poem in my speaking. And I got to this part where I was going to do the poem. And I started getting very dramatic in what I was saying. And the audience was very, very much with me. And all of a sudden, as I was just about to do something that was very poignant and required silence, all of the babies got quiet as well. Something happened in the room. It's almost as if it was communicated to all of these people, these tiny little people, and you didn't hear a peep for maybe a minute or two while I did this whole thing. They all stopped crying, the toddlers stopped walking around, and they couldn't understand what I was saying, but there was something communicated there in that moment that is very difficult to define, but is there. And I say to you, try it. Try being that yourself. Try tapping into that universal force that is there. It's there for each one of us, each one of us, no matter who we are, where you are, what your conditions of your life are, whether you're inside a prison or whether you're working as a salesman or you're selling real estate or you're a businessman or a housewife. It doesn't make any difference. You are divine. You are part of the divineness of the universe. Try tapping into that and being that and thinking that, and you're going to see really dramatic shifts take place in your life, and you're not going to be able to explain them. Probably not any better than I'm able to explain them right here. I can't just universally say, this will work if you do this. All I know is that every time people try it, they try the forgiveness route, they try the love route, the things that were problems before aren't even there any longer. Most of the ways that we have power structures divided in our culture is through what we call a bureaucracy. And in this bureaucracy setup that we have, the power structure starts at the top with the boss, and it goes down to the vice presidents and then to the assistant vice presidents and all the way down to the clerks. That goes from top to bottom, and it flows downward. And the purpose of power is to collect it, to get as much of it as you can for yourself. And so people are constantly collecting power so that they can move up this ladder and get to the top. But there's another organizational flowchart that operates in the universe that I call networking. I don't call it. Everyone calls it networking. And the way to think of it is like a telephone network where every single person within the organization has as their function to give power away. Nobody's collecting it. They're giving it away. And everybody is working for helping everybody else within the organization. And nobody wants any power. It's like as soon as you give somebody power, they say, no, that's not for me, and they pass it out to somebody else, and then they pass it on to somebody else. And networking is a phenomenal way to get anything done. It's almost like a word-of-mouth approach to living, whereas you take something, whatever it may be, if you have an idea, if you have something that you want to get done, and you give it away freely to somebody else. They then take it, and they then pass it on to somebody else. That process, pushing it out, can influence the entire world. you need to network all the time with everyone and not ever try to collect any power and not try to get anybody else to do anything for you and not try to organize other people so that they are in a linear fashion either above or below you, but to see everybody as equal and everybody as able to contribute. And that's how I see myself. Every time I give a book away, I feel like I'm networking. Every time somebody listens to a tape of mine, I feel like I'm networking. I'm probably the only speaker in the country who encourages everybody that hires me to speak to tape my tapes. I never ask them to pay me anything for it. And they're always flabbergasted at this. I even include it in my contract when they send it out. I used to have a contract that my agent wrote on there, no taping of any of Dr. Wayne Dyer's material without permission. And then they would negotiate something and they would give me a certain royalty on it and so on. And I decided that that was inconsistent with what I am and what I believe. And so what I am and what I believe is that I want the message out there. I'm not doing this for money. Money will come to me, but that's the way it is. You go out there and you advance confidently in the direction of your own dream, and then success chases you. And I don't need any more money. That isn't it at all for me. I love doing it, and I like making a difference. And so whenever I speak for any organization, I say, well, are you taping? And they say, well, and they get real nervous about, well, we were thinking about, but we didn't, weren't sure, and because they don't want to pay you, and they don't. And I said, well, why don't you get it taped, and you can make it available for all the people in your organization as a training device. And all I can think of is how terrific that is. When you're networking, if you're talking about something that is good and that is beautiful and that is going to help people to improve the quality of their lives, then you want as many people to hear. If you're authentic, then you want everybody that is possible to hear that. And in a win-win situation, the more people who hear that, I always feel that anybody who hears any of my tapes or anything and passes it on to somebody else is just going to just say, oh, hey, that's really good. I think I'll go get his books. And even though that's not the purpose of doing it, it all is going to come back like tenfold. That's what networking is. You send it out, and then they send it out, and you send it out. But if you're hoarding it, or if you're trying to keep people from having it, that's why I believe so much in what we're doing right here, what these tapes are about, and what this company is about. It's about every time you sell a product, even though certainly everybody has to make a living, and there's nothing wrong with that. Everybody from the person who's running the recording equipment, to the people who produce it, to the people who sell it, to the people who package it and truck it, and the postal people, everybody is going to make something out of it. But every single time you send a product out of here, you're networking. You know, whoever's it is. Somebody's life is going to be improved, and they're going to tell somebody else about it. When I spoke the other day and I got that wonderful Golden Gavel Award from Toastmasters, it happened yesterday, so it was just a wonderful experience for me to receive a kind of tribute from people who speak for a living to honor me with the highest award a speaker can get. And they asked me, can we tape the talk? I said, absolutely. And I gave about a 45-minute talk. And they're now making it available. They're selling it to all of their people. They have 130,000 members in Toastmasters around the world. Those people who hear that are going to, as far as I'm concerned, they're going to say, wow, that's a great message in there. Where can I get his tapes? And they're going to call somebody and say, well, Nightingale Conard has that. And that's going to circulate. And that's how networking works. You don't think of yourself. You give it all away. And you're constantly giving it away. And the more you give away, the more you get back. But if you're giving it away to get it back, then you'll never have enough. You'll always be looking for more. If you know you already have enough, and that what you have you appreciate very much, ironically, paradoxically, that'll keep coming to you in your life. But if you don't think you have enough, and you're worried about that, then even if you do get more, it won't be enough. Because you're in a mindset of lack, rather than everything is fine. And that's just enlightenment. That's really what higher consciousness is. What I have is enough. I have everything that I need to have total, complete peace and happiness right now. Everything else that I give away and get back is just a bonus. It's just a wonderful bonus. And you just keep doing that. And that's what networking is. And you can network with love all the time.
This is the end of Side 9. Please turn the cassette over to begin Side 10.